I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. At Lighthouse, we're celebrating 23 years in business. Hard to imagine. And just entering our 10th year of doing open line programs. We have a few exciting new changes. First, we have a brand new 2017 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. So if you want to browse around that, take a look. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication event tab. For over 10 years, you can imagine we've talked about or covered most topics. So if you want to find out more information, please do so. Also, we have our monthly publication, which is on there and has many, many topics across the board called Keeping on Track. You can also see that our second book is up on our website, Cracking the Business Code. It's available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icons on our homepage. Plus, in 2018, something very exciting is going to happen. We're going to have our third book. We're trying to beat Mark Emmer to that, but I don't think so because Mark's going on to his third, Cracking the Team Building Code, and it will be available towards the beginning of the middle of 2018. And also, we just started to offer skills testing for the first time and getting a wonderful response off that. For those of you that worked with Lighthouse, you might have met Glenn Croy, who is a new senior consultant with us and our COO. He has been a GM and over ops side of companies with overseeing hundreds of employees with very strong OD background, and we're very glad to have Glenn as part of our team. Our topic today is, what is strategic planning? A panel discussion. This topic, it can be very confusing to most, a mystery, and we're going to put some legs to it today with our panel of experts. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting our program today. We have just a few housekeeping items. Then for those of you who join us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar and assist companies in a variety of areas, such as interpersonal coaching, team building, stress management workshops. We have an office in Taiwan, which is getting busier and busier. So if you have an operation in Asia and would like to get leadership coaching for them or providing ideas of how to interact with a U.S.-based company, just let us know. Our Keeping on Track open line series is a response to our clients and just people feeding information and of topics they want to hear about. So if you have ideas, please let us know. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights along the way. And at the conclusion, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. So write down two or three questions during our program today. Either send them in or hold them until afterwards. I'd like to introduce our guests for today. And these guys are just amazing, all best friends and know their stuff. Truly a panel of experts. First, Mark Emmer. Mark is a consultant, author, and speaker sought after by CEOs throughout North America as an expert on strategic planning and performance improvement. Mark's firm, Optimize Inc., has an impressive client list, which includes CB Richard Ellis, Rio Tinto, Superior Industries, and dozens of small and mid-sized companies across the United States. The release of Mark's book, Intended Consequences, was covered by online by Forbes, CNBC, Fox, and CBS, and his weekly blog is syndicated by Vistage, the world's largest CEO membership organization. Mark also serves on several for-profit and nonprofit boards. By the way, if you haven't gotten the books I'm going to mention to you, they are really all wonderful reads, and you should get order those. I want to introduce Rob Scher. Rob is founding principal of CEO to CEO, a consulting firm of former chief executives that improves the leadership infrastructure of mid-sized companies. and seeks to accelerate their performance. He was chief executive of Bentley Publishing Company for many years and steered the firm to become a leader, a leading player in the industry of decorative art publishing. Rob speaks frequently, is also a Vistage speaker, and has published extensively on the successful leadership traits and skills of leaders of mid-sized companies. He's a regular columnist on Forbes.com, has numerous posts on Harvard Business Review Online, Entrepreneurial.com, and CFO.com. He's authored two books, The Seal of the Deal, How I Built a Company Through Acquisitions, and his newest book, Mighty Mid-Sized Companies, How Leaders Overcome Seven Silent Growth Killers. He also publishes his own newsletter, The CEO Insomnia Factor. He's received a BS degree in business administration from Haywood State University and has an MBA from St. Mary's College. Let me introduce Paul Walker. Many of you know Paul from over the years. Paul is the CEO and founder of Genius Stone Partners and works with domestic and international companies to improve their bottom line for today and planning for tomorrow. Paul is one of the few CEO coaches who has worked with numerous Fortune 500 CEOs and their key staff members for over 25 years, along with many mid-cap organizations. Some of the organizations Paul has worked with include Starkist Foods, Vons Grocery Stores, New York Life, and Klein, Rockwell International, countless manufacturing firms, global utilities, service, and consulting organizations. Paul is the author of the best-selling book, Unleashing Genius, and his new book that just came out, Invent Your Future, Seven Imperatives for the 21st Century. I feel privileged to have Mark, Rob, and Paul back with us today for this amazing panel discussion we're going to have. Before we start, also registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. The topic will be working with your team in our economy and planning for the future. So, general rules that we've had for our panelists is going to throw questions out there, and if everyone can limit their responses to 1 to 3 minutes, that would be terrific. So let's start with our first question. Here we go. What's the difference between strategic planning and operational planning? Should it be an annual event and breaking the habit of being reactive versus embracing a plan? Who would like to start?
I'm happy to. Rob here.
Thanks, Rob.
So the difference between operational planning and strategic planning for me is the time frame and the kinds of things you're tackling. Operational planning is who does what by when during the course of the current year, right? What's got to get accomplished? Are we on budget? Are we executing our plan well? And that's, you know, operational planning. It's a little bit more tactical and down to earth, and there's a huge follow-up piece. You don't just create an operational plan, you stay on it. Strategic planning, in contrast, is for the longer term. It's bigger ideas. It's maybe big changes in the way you might be running your business or the direction you might go or the geography or the product mix that you might have. And should it be an annual event? I would say no. I think that strategic planning, I find for mid-sized companies, is best broken up over time. Most mid-sized companies, if they make it an annual event, it becomes a 1 or 2 day offsite where everyone talks more and talks about what they already knew and what they talked about before, and you don't have the kind of discipline in the process that I find is effective. So I like to have it broken up over quarters. You start out collecting ideas. You establish projects, research projects, where you create business cases for some of the best ideas. And you meet regularly, at least quarterly, to start to winnow through them and hold the team accountable. I think one of the hardest challenges is that most operators of mid-sized businesses are used to reacting and doing what's in front of them. And this long-term thinking thing and doing research is really weird and hard to prioritize. And so by breaking up specific potential strategies or strategic initiatives into projects where you're creating a business plan and researching specific things, you can create intermediate deadlines that people can react to, do chunks of work, to get more insight and understanding of the big strategic choice that probably ultimately gets made towards the end of the year in just enough time to take that strategy and pull it into the next year's operating plan.
Well, that was great.
Thank you.
I'd add that strategic planning is inventing the future. You know, you can't create what you can't conceive. So a good strategic plan looks at the market trends, your position in the market, your capabilities, and then breaks that plan down into each person's responsibility in the organization to achieving it, which sort of merges into your operational plan. But one of the things that I find people forget is it has to be pictured in such a way that not your market, your employees, and your vendors can relate to it and can see where you're going and become participants in it. And not necessarily annual, but you need to keep an eye on the future all the time and make adjustments as the market changes. And in that way, you can be responsive to whatever is coming, but more important, responsive to the notion of stimulating the market to fit into your strategic plan. In other words, moving market wants to market needs. And I think a good strategic plan does a great job of having not only your team, but your customers see what a need is that they may not be aware of at the moment.
So, Damon, this is Mark. I would say, you know, the answer to any question in business is it all depends, right? So I think the characteristics of the company will, you know, dictate how you might go about strategic planning and operational planning. So, for example, you know, your larger mid-market companies may be global. They may have multiple divisions. And, you know, you really need to have the corporate vision and strategic plan done, and the divisions may take part in more operational planning. So I think, you know, a technology company that's very nimble might approach the entire process quite differently. I would like to speak to the second question as well. So what I find is the fact that people have to operate the business day-to-day can become kind of a rationalization that we don't have time for planning. And I think when we're reacting, that is when we're usually doing the wrong thing for the customer or the client. That's where we have our defects and mistakes. So I think that it's kind of an illogical argument when people say they don't really have time for planning, because it just takes much more time to repair your mistakes and do it right the first time. So those companies are more proactive in terms of having the right people, having the right technology, and, of course, being in the right markets with the right products and services. They're just better run companies. So, you know, being proactive is much more productive than being reactive.
Okay. Thank you. That's great. Next question, as it comes up on the screen here. Where does one start in the planning process? And I'm going to add another part to that also. Firms used to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 year, maybe a 10-year plan over the years. But in today's environment, how far out does planning go, since things seem to be changing so quickly? So you get to respond to both of those questions. That would be great.
Well, you start with understanding your market and the client, your client wants and needs, and filling in the difference between what you do and what their wants are. And so you've got to have a real good grip on present reality. And number two, you have to build, we used to follow McKinsey around, and they would put the best strategic plans together. And we found that in about 3 months, our clients realized they didn't have the personnel or the capabilities for implementing the plan. So it's also wise where you want to stretch your team, but you want to build a plan that the existing team you have is capable of executing. And I think the time frames these days are no more than 3 years, maybe 2, in terms of you know, targeting a strategic plan.
Yeah, I would agree with that. As a result of the, you know, pace of change, people have kind of narrowed their time horizon. So the companies that used to do a 10-year plan are doing a 5-year plan, and the ones that did a 5-year plan are doing a 3-year plan. But also, you know, in terms of where to start, you know, I think most entrepreneurs and management teams, first they want to figure out who should be involved in the strategic planning process, like they create a team. And then, as Rob suggested earlier, you know, a really important place to start is gathering data, you know, and I just find that a lot of companies we've worked with who aren't mature in strategic planning, they make a lot of decisions that aren't really fact-based decisions. So, you know, it's getting the right people situated so that you can do the right market research and prepare the team to even have a strategic conversation.
You know, where I jump in, I agree on the shorter time frame, with the exception that some companies are making capital investments that might run 10, 15, 20 years. And so I think if that's you, there's a lot more burden to look much further and make sure that the investment you're making today will pay out over the life of that investment. And that's harder and harder nowadays. In looking at the, you know, where do you start in the planning process, data gathering, for sure. But I think the question of starting is tricky. So once you start doing strategic planning, there should never be another start, because it's an ongoing process. And, you know, you've got to look back if you've done it for 1 year or 2 years or 5 years. Hey, what were the strategic choices we made a year ago? What was the critical assumptions that we validated a year ago? Are they still true? How is our strategic work that we started last year doing? How are our other strategies running? Because there's always a strategy. And then when we say what's stopped, what's changed, what's not working, to me then that's the starting point to say, okay, now what do we need to adjust this year? And so, you know, that's where I'd start if there's any kind of a distinct process already in place.
Yeah, I agree with Rob's comment. You know, probably the biggest mistake that companies make is they think of strategic planning as an event and not a cycle. And it has to be a cycle, a repeatable formula, and you continuously improve that process and make it better all the time. But if you're on a quarterly cycle, annual cycle, whatever that cycle is, it's very important that you kind of build the muscle that there's an expectation on the part of the team that, yeah, we're seeing this plan through and these goals are real and we will pivot and perhaps adjust in real time, but and then we're going to reevaluate and we're going to start all over again. So you really never stop strategic planning. It's an ongoing process.
I agree.
Good advice. So, we have a global client, and they take their strategic plan and they break it down into drills throughout the year. So, I wanted to check with you guys to see what your thoughts are about drills. What does it look like? What does it mean? Why bother doing drills?
You got to help me on what a drill is. I'm not sure I understand
the
question.
Taking something, I'll make it really simple. This is an operational drill. Like in our company, we had a drill from an IT standpoint. What happens if a virus comes in? And fortunately, we went through it, and then how can we get up again? But what if we get up and the virus is we take backup and that gets infected. So we actually did have that happen a couple of years ago. Unfortunately, we went through the drill and we were back up within 3 hours, but we followed protocols.
Okay. So I think it's important, word I use is scenario planning, and to have different scenarios as part of your strategic plan, you know, plan A, plan B, plan C, one's more aggressive, one's medium. And what's important to have is assignments when certain things happen. So if you have a strategic plan that's based on a 30% increase in sales and it looks like it's only going to be 10, then you have to have a plan in place. One of my clients just finished this, that the management team knows what to do when certain things are triggered in the marketplace or triggered in your company. So you don't have to really start your strategic plan again. So to me, having that drill, which would be preparing to react or respond, you know, to changes in the marketplace or changes in your capital requirements, is, you know, a part of your strategic plan.
Oh, I like that, A, B, or C.
Yeah. A would be very aggressive. B, maybe less aggressive. C would be, okay, recession's coming. If a recession comes, this is what we do. So everybody knows their assignment.
Right.
And I had a client that just did that last year, and their sales were down 10%, but they hit their EBITDA targets because they were prepared. By a certain month, if sales weren't trending, they went to, you know, plan B. So they sales went down. They couldn't control that, but they could control EBITDA, and they hit their EBITDA targets exactly.
Okay. Mark, Rob, any thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, Rob here. So, you know, I'm struggling with it a little bit. Scenario planning, looking at all the different features that could happen to make sure that the plans we've laid cover all those and that we broadly understand what to do. But, and maybe I'm a contrarian here, mid-sized businesses just typically aren't all that sophisticated when it comes to strategic planning. And, you know, I'm excited when I find a new client that has a strong strategic planning process in place. And so to try to get them to doing a good strategic planning process, I'm happy for. And this notion about drilling around strategy, which is different than a virus, that's more of an operational situation or a fire,
yeah, sure,
or an accident. I'm not talking about that, but where we say, hey, key competitor all of a sudden launches a product that's dead on target for our product and it's better. What are we going to do? You know, that to me might be a strategic level drilling. I don't see it very often, and I'm not sure I could get very many of our clients to do it consistently. I think they would come back and say, look, when that happens, we'll hold an all-day meeting and figure out what to do, and we'll go do it.
Here's my objection to that. One is, so I'll just use a client that I just had, is the fact that the senior management, should sales drop below a certain level, we're going to have to sit down and lay people off, and they know who they were going to lay off and when they were going to do it, motivated senior management to actually work harder at keeping sales together because they knew what it was going to look like if sales dropped below a certain level.
What a motivator.
It's a very big motivator because they didn't want to lay people off. But so in this case, there was this, instead of sales going down as much as they predicted, it only went down about 5%, but still they had action plans ready to maintain EBITDA without disrupting the flow of their business.
So, Dana, I would take a middle-of-the-road view on this. So I think it's critical in the formation of strategy, which would also be the kind of the adjunct to scenario planning, that, you know, you do a very significant environmental scan or steep analysis, and you understand all of the external factors that can affect your business before you do a market analysis. And that's, frankly, a step a lot of businesses skip. And then they have something unforeseen, and they're not prepared. And, you know, we think about the future so we can decide what to do today. So I think it is really important to have that kind of broader viewpoint of some potential wild card events that could impact your business. Now, all of that being said, I think you also have to be kind of practical about it, right? So one thing that would be very practical to Paul's earlier point is you could have two budgets. You have an aggressive budget, you have a softer budget. And when the more aggressive budget, there may be you're hiring different people at different times of the year, or you're making different decisions about pricing or whatever the case may be. So, you know, I think there probably is a middle ground.
That's good. It's a great segue, and we've talked about some of this. What if a strategic plan is too idealistic or versus executable? And talk about disruptors and how to deal with disruptors.
Well, you know, I think if a strategy at the start can be idealistic and high-level and aspirational and fuzzy, I've got no problem with that. But if we've chosen that as our strategy, it's worthless if we don't then take it down and say, how do we drive it, and what are we going to do, and who's going to do what? That's that connection into the operating plan that I think you mentioned as well, Paul. You have to take that step. Otherwise, you know, you go to the once-a-year retreat and dream big and nothing ever happens and you have the same dream once a year. That's just, you know, a waste. that's my take.
I have my clients do quarterly reviews of the strategy and the effectiveness of it. So they spend a day every quarter with me. And we look at things. And one of my other clients, a different client, they had committed to their private equity firm a, you know, 50% growth in sales in 3 years. And you know, which first of all is a little idealistic, so I brought that to their attention. But second of all, the leadership of the firm were engineers. They had very little sales and marketing experience, so as they begin to So they didn't have a lot of choice. You know, this private equity firm, they want this, right?
Sure.
So now they're looking at their whole internal structure to promote and hire people who are better at sales and marketing. Because if you're not good at sales and marketing, you're not going to increase your revenue anytime soon. So to me, it's that you've got to challenge the plan. Again, balance it with your capabilities. There's another case where an engineering-based firm that had a good brand over a long period of time was losing market share because of pricing and all these other things. And they had been way too idealistic about what they could achieve. And you've got to confront that. It has to fit the capabilities of your existing team, unless you're going to replace everybody or half of them. So I think if you put a plan out that is just plain impossible, you're going to lose your whole team. They're going to be laughing behind your back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. I think, Dana, this question also brings in the focus, the innovator's dilemma, right? So the people who are responsible for innovating and looking around the bend, it's not very productive to have them being the same people who are responsible for kind of enabling and protecting the status quo. As a matter of fact, the operational people who are protecting the status quo, it's kind of impossible for them to think about the things that can replace them. So I think that speaks to the need of having dedicated people responsible for innovation and or R&D. And, of course, that's difficult in your smaller companies. So if you can't have dedicated people, you at least have to have dedicated time, or you'll end up back in that box that we talked about earlier about being reactive all the time. The other thing I just want to mention is, you know, I've been in a lot of debates where people want to argue about what's strategic and what's tactical, and one's no good without the other. So, you know, as we suggested earlier, it's important that you start with the visioning, but that needs to cascade down throughout the organization. At some point, it becomes tactical. So, you know, it's sometimes a hard distinction to make.
Yeah, for sure. So,
and I don't believe in the word go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Were we going to talk about disruptors as well, Dana?
Sure.
So, you know, how to deal with disruptors. I think we're not talking about certain executives that give us a headache. We're talking about marketplace disruptors,
right.
A.K.A. Mm-hmm. Uber with the taxi firms and so on. So, you know, it's
Uber's lost $2.4 billion last year, so just interesting.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, disrupting and not necessarily profitable. But, you know, I think it's not through cost cutting, and it's not through incrementalism, and it's not hoping that they'll go away. It's about really coming to grips with what they're bringing to market, and are they truly going to disrupt your business, and whether they're successful or not is another story. And then, you know, it's about changing your business model, or either redisrupting, finding a new way, or understanding how the competitive platform has changed and what you're going to have to do to succeed again. And it's scary and it's hard and it demands great strategic planning, but it's a big wake-up call. But if you just don't react to it and hope it goes away, you'll probably go away.
Yeah, I think a lot of professional managers are intimidated by the word disruption, and they think that that's like a big company thing and maybe doesn't apply to them. But I would suggest that, you know, disruption could take on the form of just evolving your business model in a way that you reframe your offer and your customers perceive you differently. And sometimes there's things that are actually very low cost where you can do that, for example, having a different pricing or monetization method than everyone else in your industry could be quite disruptive without requiring a lot of kind of capital investment. So, you know, if you look at the playbook of Silicon Valley today and the companies that are so-called disruptors, you know, there are attributes in their models that I think could be applied to any company regardless of size or if you're B2B or B2C or whatever. So, for example, usage pricing, where people pay for their actual usage of a thing like Airbnb. Or it could be, you know, personalization, which, you know, we're seeing a lot of mass customization on the internet right now, where one of my clients prints T-shirts. You can order a St. Patrick's Day T-shirt, and it's shipped to you the next day, print on demand. You know, those kinds of things are disruptive, but they're not necessarily executed by large companies.
Hmm. Yeah, I like to be the disruptor as well as react to it, but a lot of ways to disrupt your industry. And one of the key things that I advise my clients to do is challenge the assumptions that everybody has in their given industry. And challenge them big time and be prepared to operate from a different assumption. And as you do that, it starts to move the market towards you, particularly if your strategic planning was well thought out and you know that the assumptions in the marketplace are weak or old, and now you disrupt by taking a whole different tack and drawing in clients. So I think it's important that you're disrupting the marketplace.
It'll be interesting over the next couple of weeks. The Christian Science Monitor has announced a new methodology for reporting news that they feel is going to be a true disruptor. It's coming out, I think they said it's 25th or so. So it'll be interesting to see what their thoughts are around that and how that rolls out. So we'll keep our eyes open for that. Let's go on to the next.
One other thing that I think is worth mentioning is, you know, looking to the future, what we're seeing is a lot of these companies who are disruptors, they're platform companies, meaning they have access to a lot of data from a lot of data points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think about your Amazon and your Uber and your eBay and those kinds of companies. And in the future, it's whoever is controlling the information is going to win. So that is the advantage that they are creating for themselves, is better integrated systems, more data, and the ability to use that data to make the lives easier of their customers, which is the kind of the upside of big data. So I think, regardless of size or industry, we need to be keenly aware of that, because that's where the real opportunity is to create competitive advantage.
Nah, that's a good point, Mark. Thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, we also hear, I'm sure you guys hear this all the time, I know I hear it, that, you know, these people, they sit in this room and they go off into this retreat and they come with all these wonderful ideas and they come back. And the team that's put the ideas together, they're all on board because they've been focused on this and working on it for weeks, and they're there. But then they come back into the organization and there's an assumption that everybody knows what's taking place or what they should be doing. So how do you get buy-in from the entire organization? Any thoughts on that?
So I involve as many people as possible, even though some of them are not strategically inclined or have good cognitive skills. As a form of empowerment, we don't necessarily take their advice. That's number one. So people feel like they're part of it, whether they were or not. And number two, you've got to translate your plan into what it means at every level in your organization, down to the people on the manufacturing floor. So they don't need to know the whole plan, but they need to see the value to them, the value to them and their organization in their part of, you know, the strategic plan.
Okay.
Yeah, we're seeing more and more clients who want us to talk to a lot of people, both internally and externally. So with some of our clients, for lack of a better word, we do a focus groups with frontline employees, sometimes 100, 200 employees give input. And just for them to have the opportunity for their voice to be heard is really, really important kind of in the overall process.
And what I'd add to that is real communications planning for the output. So once a decision's been broadly made, to really think through, who do we tell, what's the message, who carries that message, and I often see where, rather than just an all-hands meeting, maybe that kicks it off, and again, it depends on the size of the company, and then each leader goes into their own department or functional area and has a real discussion around it and explains whatever that those people need to know to understand. And then there's a carry through it. It's not just one time, but there's some reinforcement to where people get it. And I think in most of the companies that we work with, people are open to it. They just want to know what's going on and have it explained. They don't need to know every where and why, but so often they don't, and things just kind of happen, and no one even ever tells them anything, and that's a big mistake.
I'm curious what the two of you think of, say, in a 75 or 100 employee company, do you think hearing it directly from the CEO is important, or do you think it's better communicated in the smaller departmental settings?
Both. I think that in that size company, it's great to hear it straight from the CEO in a 15 or 20 minute all hands meeting, and then I immediately have them break up and the head of finance sits down with the finance team, because at 75 people, they won't ask questions even if they're completely confused. And the messaging might be slightly different. Hey, what's this new shift going to mean for us in finance? So I put the two together.
I agree.
Mark, one of your clients, Kravitz, they do a thing called Innovation Day, right?
Right.
So how does that impact or contribute to the strategic plan?
So honestly, I would say at Innovation Day, some of the output is quite strategic and useful, and a lot of it is, wow, it would be really great if we could get this printer to work on that network or whatever. So,
gotcha, okay.
Yeah, so, but it is, to your point, an opportunity for everyone to contribute to the strategy and just to make the company a more effective company and a better place to work. So they create a lot of energy, they gamify it, so, you know, there's rewards and that kind of thing. And I do think that creates special energy within a company.
And they shut the entire company down for that full day, right?
Yeah, for some period of time, yeah.
Okay. Very interesting. So what trends do you see when it comes to strategic planning? If there are trends, or is it the same old thing just repackaged?
Go ahead. I'm not sure I'm seeing a trend. I mean, new books always have to come out. Guilty of that. But at least for the lower mid-sized companies that we tend to work with, it's just, I think it's just, if we can get them to best practices, that's awesome. I can't sense any trend that's out there.
Okay. Paul, Mark?
Yeah, I think for me it's shorter time frames, more involvement, more rolling strategic plans that are examined quarterly.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say there's more agile management. And as I mentioned earlier, I don't know if this is a trend as much as a cycle, but I think companies have just been more aggressive of late because of cheap money and a more favorable regulatory environment, and you know, probably a lot of activity with private equity firms and so on. It seems like there's a lot of activity to me.
Yeah, I think there's more of a long-term focus now in terms of the financial industry's demands on leaders. it went to very short term, but I think with all the things that you just mentioned, it's becoming more long term and more expected that you have a plan. And that's about all I can say.
Okay. And coming up on two more slides here, advice for those who want to exit the marketplace and the strategic plan. Does that freak people out when it's brought up at a strategic planning meeting and the owner goes, well, I'm planning on exiting and here's what I need ideas.
Right. So you're not going to tell the whole population of the company, but your key people need to know what your exit strategy is. And different exit strategies require different strategic plans and different operational setups. So it's critical that, you know, if an exit is imminent or planned in 2 to 3 years, if you're owned by a private equity firm, it's 3 years, you're going to be exiting, at least selling the business, doing a strategic merger or something like that. You've got to know what it is to build your plan, period. But you can't be telling everybody in the company. You're just going to make them very nervous and they start putting their resumes out. Yeah.
Right. Mark,
yeah,
Paul?
Dane, I'd say the other big mistake we see is that all of a sudden, you know, an entrepreneur or management team, they get a very enticing offer and they decide to take it and they haven't done their planning. They haven't done their tax planning. Maybe they should have moved to another state and avoided state taxes. Maybe they should have formed an ESOP and potentially reduced their tax liability significantly. Maybe they should have put handcuffs on key employees that might leave. So, you know, you need to be doing exit planning 3 or 5 years in advance and have a level of attention to it if you want to kind of manage the number and have the best, not only financial result, but I think also the best result for your management team and your employees.
And I'll tackle this from kind of a different direction. I guess, to me, an acquisition or an exit isn't a strategy in and of itself. It's a tactic. It's certainly a change. And so if I knew I was looking to exit in 2 years, I'd want to think strategically about who was going to buy me, what they would want in terms of a strategy that we've got and built inside the firm. And certainly
absolutely,
I don't want to embark on a strategy where the value comes in 7 years if I'm going to sell in 2 years. So some strategies are too long. But I'd certainly, at exit point, want to be able to point to a powerful strategy that will drive value up over time after I sell so that I can get a bigger, stronger price, right? So so I think that's, you know, that's important. Strategies also require investment, and that can affect the way businesses are valued as well. So super important to understand potential exit times, but I think it's the strategy, there's a strategy within that and through that event that's important.
Yeah, I agree completely.
That's well put.
Yeah.
This is our last slide, then we're going to open up the line. What works and what – you guys are all facilitators. What works and doesn't work for working with a facilitator? Might as well go to the experts and ask them so clients can hear it from your guys' mouths. What works and what doesn't work?
Well, what works is having the facilitator facilitate a dialogue between your stakeholders and your company. And so guide that dialogue towards the things that they don't know about building a strategic plan. So a good facilitator knows and has sort of been where they want to go in one way or another. But a good facilitator makes sure that it's not his or her idea, that the ideas, you know, come from the people running the business. And a bad facilitator, someone who's never done it before.
Right,
and that's pretty common, actually. So management team will go looking for facilitator, and people who commonly facilitate and run project management meetings or whatever will tout themselves as strategic planners, and I think it's an entirely different animal. So, you know, I think the our participants today, if they were looking to hire a facilitator, they should be asking, well, how many of these do you do a year? How many of these have you done in your life? What's your process? What tools do you have? who's your team,
right.
You know, you'd want to flesh out. And then I think it really comes down to finding people you can work with and trust and who can fit your the style of your team.
So that's a good point, Mark. So it's kind of like interviewing a doctor before going in for surgery. You don't want someone that's just done five of these surgeries. You want someone that has maybe 500 or 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 under their belt because they'll have the experience.
Well, I mean, if you had a cold, you could go to a general practitioner, but if you have a heart attack, you can go to a heart surgeon, right? I mean, is the value of your future value of your business and the success of your team as important as the doctor you go see? I would hope so.
Yeah, that's because I hear it all the time. Oh, I've got this strategic planner that's coming in. Then I'll ask him some questions, and it turns out it's a facilitator of a meeting. But that's a lot
right.
different than the depth that comes from creating a strategic plan. That's my
thought.
And I think there's maybe two roles here. If you hire a strategic planning consultant who helps the team think strategically, understand what strategic planning is, drive the sort of the depth of the analysis, that's important, but it's not the same as facilitating a session. And so sometimes you need both, where you need someone to teach a team how to do good strategic planning and facilitate, but there are also great teams that know how to do strategic planning, but they want an outside facilitator so they can all participate and contribute. And so those are just two different things. And it's really important to understand what you need. Do you just need a facilitator or do you need more? I think the other thing that's a mark of a good, well, both a good facilitator and strategic planner is understanding the goal of the meeting or the offsite or the retreat. Is it brainstorming, or is it to make a final decision? There's all kinds of different things, or is it to, you know, add energy or get people thinking long term? That really has to come mostly from the client. But if they're not used to this at all, they might need some help to understand what they need to walk away with to call it a good process or good session.
Yeah, my experience is that most companies don't want to hire the former that you just described. That's the McKinseys and the Bains, and the people will come in and they'll tell you what to do. And I think what most management teams want of a facilitator is for you to help them think through what they want to do and maybe provide some advice. But ultimately, the role of the facilitator is to make the session more productive and put the management team in a position where they can make great decisions as opposed to kind of those decisions being dictated to them.
Well, I actually think there's a middle ground. So, you know, I've worked with lots of companies where if I just facilitated the session, we'd have a puddle deep strategic planning session with a lot of opinions. But instead they say, look, this is going to be three or four different meetings, and Rob, we need you to make sure that each of the people who are supposed to do something do it well. And if they're not sure how to do it, to coach them through that. So example, someone had to come up with a training, you know, it was a strategic shift to do more training for the 800-person firm. And, you know, after I pushed it, this guy Bruce a number of times says, Rob, I don't know what to do. How do I know what other companies like ours do for training? And I had to coach him through how to do research and don't, you know, call a company that's not a competitor but similar in structure to yours. Reach out through your HR connections. He didn't really know how to get started to do the job well, and that's not just facilitating a meeting. That's facilitating a whole process and, frankly, some coaching and mentoring, but it's not handing them a training program, right? And so I think sometimes that's important.
Yeah, you got to know what they don't know. Okay, because you can't do a strategic plan if you're just facilitating and the leadership doesn't know certain things, requirements, how to look at a market. So it is a combination. I mean, you have to run the meeting, but you really have to push them and find out what they know and what they don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are fair points. And I think the other thing is, you know, who's the customer? Who's the strategic planning? Who's the consumer of the strategic plan? What output do they want? And sometimes that generally that's the group that you're meeting with, right? But sometimes it's a board, or it might even be one particular investor. So, you know, knowing what the end game is really important as well.
Yeah, most time it. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
So I have a question for all of you, and what we're going to do today is not open up the line for questions. If any of you, because I have this other question I want to ask, I'm going to burn up the rest of the time. So, in the past, there was the one page business plan, quote strategic plan, and then there was the old fashioned, God knows how thick it was. Let's go around just real quickie. So I'd like each of you to describe it, a sentence or less, what strategic planning means to you. And how long should the plan look like as far as a deliverable at the end of the day?
So for me, it means inventing the future, not being at effect of the future. That's what strategic planning means to me. And you got to have a summary. You have in any strategic plan that's worth a damn, you read the executive summary, which may be three paragraphs, and you know exactly what this is all about, where you're going. If you've got investors involved, they're reaching for their wallet. They're going, yeah, I'm going to invest in that. That's crazy, but I want to hear the details. So then the center of the strategic plan is, okay, here's how we're going to do it step by step, market by market, whatever, and then, you know, a summary that kind of repeats the opening of the plan and adds the benefits that come, you know, from insight into some of the details. So it has to be stated in an executive summary very clearly, and compelling picture of the future and opportunities of the future. Don't wait till the end of your document, you know, to do that summary. You do it up front, and then you prove it, and then you repeat it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I think, you know, 1 and 2 page business plans are kind of in vogue right now because they're easy. You know, so some advisor says you really need a strategic plan, and people want to check a box, so they download a form on the internet, but I don't really think to think through the future of a company and all of the nuances can really be done in a page or two. That doesn't mean that you need to have war and peace, but I think to Peter's point, Paul's point. There isn't any reason why you can't have a very tight summary and what he called a picture of the future or a vision map or something that summarizes the strategy in a couple of pages, but after that, people want to see the supporting information and the rationale for the decisions that have been made. So, you know, my approach to it is, you know, we provide the summary and then we provide the detail for people that want to see it.
Yeah, but if that summary isn't compelling, they're not even going to look at the details.
Right. Agreed.
Period.
So my take, I'm a huge fan of the one-page business plan process, but more for operational planning. It's for internal use where we're breaking it out on who's going to do what by when, and there's, you know, one for each leader. That's not what we're really talking about here in terms of broader strategic planning. I think a strategic plan is going to be much longer, and it has to, and it was already said, identify those critical assumptions that we made, right, the underlying factors of the industry, what our internal competencies are, those things. It has to lay those out clearly so that a year from now, 2 years from now, we can look back and say, why didn't this work or why did this work? And we identified these 9 things as crucial drivers of our success. Do those 9 things still, are they still in play? And so there has to be enough depth in the writing to be able to come back to it and understand where we left off. And so it is naturally longer, and I think it has to include the things that we decided weren't important or that we weren't going to do, again, so it covers that whole spectrum. And, of course, a summary and some tools and things that make it more actionable and more clear, absolutely. But unlike an operating plan that every month you better pull it out and see if you're on top of your KPIs and you're tackling your projects, a strategic plan doesn't need to be pulled out every month and be actionable, because the actionable bits find their way into the operating plan. This is a deep thinking document that says, this is our best thinking. Here's the homework we've done. Here's the data that we collected, so that it's there for us to come back to later.
Yeah, it's about the timing of the window of opportunity. Where is the window of opportunity? What's the timing? How are we going to hit it? Period. And
right.
You better be able to communicate that in the executive summary.
You guys have been absolutely amazing on a very complex topic that's not that complex, but it seems to get that way. And you guys do a wonderful job and for working with companies to help them fulfill their vision and to hit that bar and to make money and have fun. Also, before we close today, if you would like to sign up for our next open line, which will be on May 18th, please feel free to, working with your team and planning for the future. I want to thank each of you for being on the program. And if anyone wants to reach out to Rob, Mark, or Paul, or you used to be Peter, don't forget that, we're at Easter time. please feel
free. As long as you're robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Right,
there
right.
There you
right.
go. Please feel free to reach out to any of our guests today. They'll be more than happy to talk with you about any of the topics today. And everybody that has attended, please feel free to share this information with your roundtable groups, if you're a member of Vistage or other CEO roundtable groups, or with your associations and have them post it and share it with their association members. This is a very rich topic. The other thing is that all of our guests today have written some very important books, and they're very practical, they're easy reads, and it'll help you get a handle around what strategic planning is all about. And it'll be a win-win and fun scenario that you'll be setting up for your organization. So thank you all for attending today. Thank you to our guests for being on Open Line today. And everybody have a great day and a profitable rest of the year. And I'm sure we'll be talking soon.
Thanks, Dana. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay.